What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we will be discussing the adolescent athlete. Youth sports performance has taken off in the past 10 years, and I have Mark Bruce, a good friend of mine, on the podcast to discuss why. Mark is the owner of Fit Strength Performance, located in Fairport, New York. He is a Fairport native and played collegiate basketball at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. He was fortunate enough to start all 4 years and finish with a master's in psychology and education. After college, Mark had the opportunity to try out with 3 teams in England, but was not fortunate to make either teams. However, in 2012, with his basketball background, he found himself coaching freshman hoops, enrolled at Brockport College, studying to become a school counselor, aspiring to be a bodybuilder, and training basketball players on the court and in the weight room. Soon after, Mark realized he knew nothing about sports performance, so he dove headfirst into Google and YouTube to learn as much as he could. Fast forward to 2020, he currently holds certifications in CSCS, ACE, and school counseling, and owns a private performance training center where he works with athletes of all ages, as well as adults looking to lose weight, gain muscle, and burn stubborn body fat. The focus at FSP is to help athletes and adults master the fundamentals, F-U-N, of movement, develop physical and mental resiliency, and achieve their goals. So with that, let's welcome my buddy Mark. What's up, Mark?
What's happening, Matt? Thanks for having me. Super pumped to have this conversation with you.
Having you again. Round two.
I know, right? Yeah. It's got to be better.
It's all good. It's going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, were sports and athletics always a part of your upbringing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I played everything growing up. My two main sports were basketball and baseball. However, at a young age, I didn't like playing sports. I was always the goalie in soccer or the right fielder in baseball. Basketball actually was my least favorite sport because you had to run a lot, and I didn't like movement all that much. Shockingly, I know. When I was younger, I was overweight, and I kind of was forced to play sports because my parents knew it would be good for me. And you know, in sixth grade, I only weighed 30 pounds less than I do now as an 11-year-old. I weighed 160 pounds when I was 11 years old, and you know, something just clicked. You know, I couldn't say that I was bullied. I had friends, great parents, great support system. I do recall times where people made fun of my weight. I definitely felt uncomfortable at times with my shirt off. I always had to go to the bathroom during sprints because I just didn't want to run. And, you know, one day I was like, I don't want to feel this way anymore. You know, I don't want to feel shy. I don't want to feel uncomfortable with my shirt off. And I took it upon myself to lose weight going into seventh grade. I dropped 30 pounds. Grew a couple inches. It's not like I went from 5'2 to 6'2. And from there, sports, I always just gravitated to sports. You know, I played basketball and baseball, and then I fell in love with basketball because it was fun. I felt good. I was actually pretty decent at it. And from there, I've been moving ever since. Haven't stopped.
Yeah, that surprises me. I never would have guessed that you were overweight as a kid, because if you look at you now, you're chiseled, you're ripped, you're in phenomenal shape. You definitely practice what you preach. That's awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I was lucky to have that mental resiliency in a sense to identify the fact that I just didn't feel good. And I'm a school counselor as well, and I talk to my kids a lot about just being open and honest with how you're feeling, and that's usually the first step, being aware. And I just didn't feel good. I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. And once I identified that, I just made the conscious effort to just eat when I was hungry, move every day. And, you know, you working with, you know, with patients, with athletes, with adults, that's usually the most common theme to reach your goals, whether it's athletic or a physical goal if you're an adult. If you just eat appropriately, and eat when you're hungry and always move, you're usually going to get to where you want to go, because we both know consistency is key. Consistency will get you to where you want to go, without a doubt.
I like what you said too. It's not how did I look? Maybe some of it was that, like, as a young kid, but how did I feel? I didn't like how I felt. I need to change that. And yes, with that comes looking better, losing some weight and feeling stronger and getting more confidence. But I like that. How did you feel? That's important. What or who inspired you to go down the sports performance road?
So, you know, my mentor, one of my good friends, his name's Carl Jacobson. He's a good family friend. And I wish I would have made the connection earlier in my career, because, you know, I've known Carl. He owns Tape Training System out in Cleveland. He works with a lot of high-level basketball players. He's got a number of clients in the NBA overseas, a lot of high-end D1 players. But he also has adults and athletes in the private sector. And I was working for a company in a Rochester local company called Hoop Strength. And it was great to get introduced to training with adults or training with athletes, basketball players specifically. And after talking to Carl, he kind of brought to my attention, like, you know, do you really know what you're doing? And I kind of thought, you know, in order to help a basketball player be better, you just had to get stronger, lift weights, move how I moved. Because I think a lot of us strength coaches start out doing things that we do innately. You know, I squatted, I did deadlifts, I did bench press, I did dumbbell bench pressing. And once he put that bug in my ear, he gave me the platform to start exploring strength and conditioning. Because there's a huge difference between personal training and then sports performance enhancement. And the things that I do in my gym, you know, I'm physically preparing my athletes. You know, my classes for my athletes are called physical preparation classes. And after talking to him, picking his brain, you know, I dived into YouTube and Google, and I looked at the Eric Cressys of the world, Mike Boyle, Mike Robertson, and those guys, you know, helped me a ton, because it gave me that platform to look at athletic movement as its own category versus just bodybuilding, or versus just go to the weight room, go on a machine and move this way. Because athletics, you know, it's unilateral in nature. It's really about handling your relative body weight while moving. So there is a huge difference comparative to just an adult trying to lose weight. Although there are some comparisons, those are two different atmospheres. And, you know, after talking to Carl, diving down that rabbit hole, I fell in love with it. Fell in love with what it could do for athletes, how it can make them healthy. Because truth be told, 99% of the kids that I work with, they're not going to go pro. However, they have that 99% chance of being a great human being. And usually instilling the right values in the weight room is going to help them be healthy for the long term. And that's the objective.
Now, what are Mark Bruce's core principles or philosophies when it comes to developing fitness programs?
So I'm very fundamental based, you know, practice, you know, helping athletes be more human. You know, I love podcasts. I love your podcast. And, you know, I listened to a podcast from a guy named Corey Schlesinger. I always butcher his name, but he's a strength and conditioning coach for the Phoenix Suns. And he always says, you know, it's about teaching athletes how to be human. And the same thing for adults. You know, if we look at an athlete and then an adult, you know, adults are like tactical athletes. And then you got a basketball player, they're a basketball player, but very common. They sit all day. They're not moving as frequently except when they're, you know, in their sport, or if an adult is in their hour weight room or hour workout. So I try to preach to them the basic primal patterns that we've been, you know, that we're supposed to do since caveman time. And, you know, I'm big into squatting, hip hinging, split squats, unilateral hinging, pushing, pulling from a horizontal and vertical standpoint, and then rotary stability. And from there, we can kind of build off of a little more technical movements. However, from my experience working with athletes, if you just get them to master the fundamentals, if you teach an athlete how to squat, and I know there's people out there that just say back squatting's bad, you know, baseball players shouldn't do that, kids shouldn't do that, barbells will stunt their growth or they won't help them. However, you know, squatting is an innate thing. Hinging is an innate thing. And if you can't do those fundamental movements, how are you going to do them in your sport? So if you can't do them in an uncontrolled setting, versus a controlled setting, you're just more susceptible to injury. So that's my core principles when it comes to training in the weight room, mastering the basics of the weight room, as well as athletics, how to stop, how to jump, how to land, proper sprinting technique in terms of positioning of the foot, positioning of the trunk, and being able to master that, and then it'll apply more to their sport.
I love that. I think we have so many similarities, me with my patients and you with your athletes. With it all starts with the hips, mm-hmm. learning how to hip hinge, learning how to squat. Absolutely. And those blanket statements like baseball players should not back squat. I mean, that's false in my opinion. It's like, how can you say that across the board? It's like every athlete's going to be different. Maybe for some it's not correct, but it's a squat. It's like
a loaded squat. For sure.
It's in our DNA as toddlers. Like, you got a young son right now. I don't think he's squatting yet, but he will be shortly.
Oh, he is. Don't worry. He's squatting. I'm getting him to bend at the hips and knees and ankles early.
He's going to be doing jump squats soon, man. He's a beast.
Yeah. You know, I totally agree. I think a squat's a squat, and we're all about eliciting a stimulus. So this is where I people ask me all the time, you know, how young should my kid start training? And I'm like, well, movement is movement. We're trying to elicit a stimulus. So it doesn't matter if you're squatting with a barbell. It doesn't matter if you're squatting with a medicine ball. The goal is to elicit a stimulus on the muscle, on the joints, on the tendons, and then we go from there.
That was my next question. So when should adolescents begin training? So let's talk about weight training now. I get this question all the time. When do they start picking up weights, lifting heavy?
Yeah, I think, you know, depending on if we're talking about dumbbells, kettlebells, barbells, I think the perfect age for that, if I'm going to give you a number, just to be safe, it could be 6th, 7th grade. However, we can't look at the if you're in a large group setting, you kind of have to look at the chronological age, right? You can't just, you know, in a larger group setting with athletes, it's very difficult to say, all right, you two are going to do back squats or a goblet squat because biologically you can handle it. But if you're in a private section like me where I have 2 to 4 athletes, you know, I look at the chronological age or the biological age, because if they physically, if they're in 5th grade, but already they're hitting puberty at an earlier age, well, then their body is prepared to handle maybe a med ball squat or a goblet squat. But then if there's another kid at the same age, 5th grade, and he's just very underdeveloped, well, then he's more body weight. So if we're going to play it safe, you know, I think it's great for that 6th to 7th grade range, because I start at 5th, 6th grade for my fundamental programs. And this is where we learn the basic movements. And then we transition to like how to train to train. And that transitions to some of your bigger bang movements with the barbell, trap bar, kettlebells, dumbbells. So that number to me would be 5th, 6th grade, if you want to make sure that you are playing it safe and appropriate for your athlete.
You kind of already answered this, but let's go into a little bit more depth. What does this type of training entail? 6th, 7th grader.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this type of training entail for that 6th, 7th grader?
So when an athlete first walks into my weight room, you know, it starts with a conversation, you know, cause I need to know where they're at mentally, because in a private sector, a lot of the times the parents buy more into the training than the kids do, cause it's coming out of the parents' pocket. And usually parents are, this is what you have to do, this is what you need to do. But, you know, my job as their coach is to get them to buy in through trust, through communication. So it starts from where are they at in terms of the conversation of their goals, their history in the weight room. And then from there, everyone always goes through a readiness consult. And in that consult, we do basic movements. So it gives me a baseline of what they're prepared for. And it starts from your dynamic movement prep, which is just preparing the body for the demands of the workout. And that comes from your skipping series, your marching series, your Spider-Man crawls. Can you balance on one leg? You know, how do you look when you do a bodyweight squat? Because some kids innately understand it. And then some kids, they don't know what hip width means. They don't know where their feet should go. Some, you know, I get basketball players in all the time when I tell them to squat, it looks like they're squatting in their free throw position. Because that's just what they're always in, you know, right foot or left foot kind of in front of the other one. So it's kind of seeing where they're at. And then day one will give me a better sense at where should they go. So if I have a novice athlete, never worked out, kind of did this, kind of did that with dad. You know, I get a lot of kids that say, well, I train with my dad in the basement. What does that mean though? You know, because a lot of times, you know, my dad trained with me in the basement, and I was nowhere prepared for what I had to do come college. No one ever taught me how to squat. No one taught me how to deadlift or hip hinge or anything like that. But I trained with my dad in the basement. It helped me. That's what, you know, I did get stronger. But in terms of learning the fundamentals, you know, if someone said, what's a goblet squat? When I walked into college, I'd have no idea what they were talking to. But I started lifting in ninth grade. So from there, it gives me an idea of, are we starting with TRX or med ball goblet squats or medicine ball bear hug squats? Or are we starting with a dumbbell goblet squat? And usually all my athletes, the first day they come in, even some ninth graders, but if I'm talking about a fifth and sixth grader, we're going to load up that goblet squat till as heavy as they can go, you know, until no longer it's really eliciting any stimulus. And then we'll transition. So fifth and sixth grade, you know, my progressions are, we'll do body weight squats, suspension trainer squats, med ball bear hug squats, goblet squats. And once they show proficiency in those three movements in terms of that tripod foot, knowing what it feels like to have their toe, pinky, heel in the ground, what it feels like to brace to keep their stomach tight during movement, show me that they can hold the squat for a couple seconds. And then we may transition to a kettlebell front squat. I don't really see a need to load an athlete with a barbell from a squat standpoint or even a deadlift until ninth grade. Because what I talked to a lot of my parents is every athlete's coming with a ceiling. My goal isn't to get you to hit that ceiling where it's at, because that's why you hear the stories of, remember that kid, he was the best middle schooler from back in the day, but then it's like, what happened in high school? So I want my middle schooler to have their ceiling and to take that ceiling higher, so now when they get to ninth grade, they can really peak. They can really get that ceiling, because usually, you know, a lot of people recommend when they're, you know, in that junior and senior year, they can really start to specialize in training in their sport. Because they've hit puberty, they're more developed, they have more coordination, body awareness, spatial awareness. And then if their ceiling is really high, that junior and senior year, they can see some serious gains. You know, I love listen to Eric Cressy. He thinks all athletes should be deadlifting 405 by their senior year. He works with a lot of baseball players, and I believe that too. If you're consistent and you work on the basic patterns in middle school and you're training consistently.
Awesome. That's a lot of weight, but it's totally doable. You're right.
Yeah.
It's not overnight, but that's a no. Build up. Years.
Yeah. If you're training 6 years, 3 days, 3 days a week on average, you know, if you fluctuate from 2 to 3, 6 years is a long time. Long time.
With somebody like yourself, like Mark Bruce, that knows what he's talking about. Yeah, that's achievable. Let's go. So Mark, what do you think about the one sport athlete?
Yeah, I don't agree with it. Even though it's going to happen, you know, some kids are just special, you know, they're just really special, and they just figured that sport out from day one, and that's what they love, you know. So I'm never going to beat up a kid for their passion if that's where they want to go, because we don't want to stick round pegs into square holes. So if they love that sport and they want to commit to it, my only thought is, if you're a one sport athlete, you have to commit to the sport, but also the skill aspect and the physical preparedness aspect. Because our current one sport athletes, they just play the sport all year round. And it is way more busy now with sports than when you played and I played. So it is more difficult to be a two sport athlete. But my idea of a one sport athlete is a kid that plays their sport for, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 months. But then they take 3 to 4 months off and works on the physical preparedness of that sport. And that's where we miss out. Because if you're training 3 days a week for 4 months, like, it is going to be hard to play two sports. And this is where it's the easier route is to play two sports. You know, there's Urban Meyer, you know, he had quotes in the paper. He had quotes all over that said, you know, our best athletes, they've always been two sport athletes, and they don't recruit one sport athletes. So I think there's so much value in playing two sports. And one of those main values is you learn how to fail. You learn adversity playing that second sport. You know, I played baseball, so different than basketball. You know, basketball, if you're the top guy and you're getting 12 to 15 shots a game, like, you're confident that when I shoot, I'm going to get another shot. So that you're just going to have that much more confidence. When I play basketball, I get 4 shots a game. You know, I had to be perfect almost. I was 50% from threes in high school and college because I got like 2 or 3 threes a game. So I had to be perfect. But for someone who gets like 6 to 8 threes a game or 15 shots, do they know how to fail? Because they're always getting a chance. But if you play that secondary sport and you're not the stud, you're not the main man or main girl, how are you going to learn how to struggle and bounce back the next day? And that's what that secondary sport can teach you, because that mental piece is huge.
I agree. I always go back to the NFL draft class of 1983. Jim Kelly, John Elway, Dan Marino were all American in 3 sports. Now, I get it. It's not 1983. It's a different time now. But I think a 2-sport athlete is – it makes sense for a lot of athletes. But you're right. Some people are just gifted, and they're going to go down that path of 1-sport athletes. But and we could talk about – that's a whole podcast right there, right, about the – I think it's a good segue, though, into overtraining. And I think the repetition, the repetitive movements. So I know I see this a lot in my practice, overtraining. So I'm curious on your take on what is overtraining to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the basic term of overtraining is just you're training to a point where your body can't catch up and recover. And that's from a mental standpoint as well as a physical standpoint. You know, if we look at the most common overuse injury, which is soft tissue injuries, that's just repetitive damage on the same area and your body's not given time to recover. And, you know, that goes back to the 2-sport athlete. You know, I played basketball, but when basketball ended, I played baseball. Basketball is very demanding on your ankles and knees. Baseball is very demanding on your shoulders. So during baseball season, I got 3 months of recovery on my knees, you know? And so those are the big benefits of playing 2 sports. But with overtraining, you know, working with young kids, it's a lot of it has to do with the mental fatigue of always having to be on, of never getting time to relax, never getting time to recover. And those are the biggest issues that I see. You know, I get a lot of kids that come in every day. It's like they want to come in 5 days a week, but 3 out of those 5 sessions, like my knee hurts, my elbow hurts. You know, I had a kid who, you know, I specifically told him, listen, you need to take a couple months off after the summer of not playing because this injury is going to fire up again. And going into a senior year, September going into a senior year where he was still fighting for a scholarship, he was told he had elbow tendonitis and he had to take a break. 6 weeks he was off of playing basketball and training before his senior year. And he saw the court 50% of the time when he was healthy. And all that, to me, that's all preparedness. You lost that 12-week block to prepare for a demanding basketball season because you were playing AAU all summer. And then after the last season summer, that season, you jumped right into AAU, so you never took time to rest. And a lot of the athletes I've worked with, that happens way too often. So overtraining, you just repetitive damage on the joints, tendons, because you get those micro tears. Mm-hmm. You know, micro tears after micro tears is just slicing a rubber band. And after a while, you know, you're lucky if you get soft tissue injury. You're lucky if that happens. You know, God forbid something bigger happens.
I'm assuming you're pretty good at this, having conversations with athletes and their parents because they respect and trust you because you're intelligent, you practice what you preach, you know what you're talking about. But I'm curious on some tips, like how do you get compliance from your athletes? Because sometimes when I talk to a patient about it, they shut right down and they stop listening to me. It's like you got to meet them halfway. So how do you have this conversation with athletes and parents about overtraining?
Yeah, with kids want to be empowered. Kids want control, especially when you got middle school and high school kids. You know, working with that 7th, 8th, 9th grade population, they want control in that time frame. So, you know, number one, it's like, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve? Because no matter what, especially in the private sector and in any sector, you gotta produce results. You gotta produce results no matter what. If you don't produce results, you're not going to get clients. You're not going to be in business. You're not going to have a job, plain and simple. So number one, you got to figure out, what do you want? What does the athlete want? And then try to explain to them. Some athletes trust you off the bat. You know, I got kids who are much older who play pro ball and they just trust me. You know, they may ask questions, but they're like, all right, I'm here to work. Tell me what I'm doing and I'm doing it. you know, because they just, they believe in me. They trust me through the conversations, through how's your day going? How's mom? You know, how's your sister? You know, so that you develop that trust. And then from there, athletes, especially middle school and high school kids, you need to explain it to them. You need to put it in their language. So for a basketball player, you know, they may be uninterested in trap bar deadlifting. But then I'll ask you, then I'll ask them, show me your best defensive position. And they get right into that hip hinge deadlift position. And I'm like, if you can add load to that bar in this position, how good do you think you'll be on defense? How prepared do you think you're going to be from start to finish of your game if you've mastered this movement with load over and over again without injury? And once you explain it to them, and me being biased to basketball, you know, I can show them a change of direction drill. I can show them a movement with weights and say, look at this basketball move I just did. How does it see the correlation? See why if you do this, it translates to that. And usually that gets in the buy-in. And, you know, a lot of times it's always the injury route. You know, watch how he jumps. See that knee go in? You know, he doesn't feel pain or she doesn't feel pain today. But what we know through research is consecutive valgus knee over and over again, you're just straining some joints. You know, a lot of girls are hypermobile. It's like, what do we know about hypermobility? You know, you're stressing the joints over and over and over again. And if we do not build some trunk control, core strength, then after a while, you're going to get some nagging injuries that are going to catch up to you. And just by showing them the human movement, and I'll let parents kind of observe and watch, and I'll give them feedback, whether it's virtually or after the session. And I'll say, it's your choice, that idea of choice. This is what I know. If this continues to happen, so it's up to you if you want to continue or if you want to roll the dice and play the odds game.
I love what you said, that it's not what we want. It's not what Mark Bruce wants, what Dr. Matt wants. It's what the patient wants. It's what the client wants. It's what the athlete wants. I'm reading the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People right now by Dale Carnegie. Maybe you read that. I mean, it's old book.
I've heard it.
Yeah, written in the 1930s. But those principles are powerful. It's mm-hmm. like we got to get out of our own heads and just listen and talk to our clients and patients and mm-hmm. meet them and answer their questions.
You'll like this. I remember one of my, you know, first year's training, maybe it was 2 years in, and I swear I saw this bodybuilder run the rack on single arm rows, run the rack, nice. You know, just pyramid style, like beast. 10, 8, 6, just. And I remember looking at my kid, and he might have been a junior in high school. And I'm like, this dude is diesel, so I'm going to get your back diesel because we're supposed to build weight. And I remember running the rack with this kid from like, you know, I don't even know. We were from 20 to 50 pounds. And looking back, and I'm like, why on earth does a kid need to run a rack because a bodybuilder did it? And looking back, and I'm like, I was running the rack because I wanted to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And I forced this kid into a peg that didn't suit his ability. And all strength coaches say, like, if you didn't look back at your previous programming and laugh at it, then I think you're doing something wrong.
He didn't want to do that. He just did it because he was listening to you, but he didn't want to do that.
He trusted me. He trusted me.
Right.
He trusted me. And that's the thing. Like, our kids, our athletes, our adults, they trust us. Mm-hmm. So it's up to us to ensure that our goals are their goals, and we're putting them at the forefront.
Now let's talk recovery with athletes. So what do you talk about when it comes to recovery with your athletes?
So number one, it's the outside the weight room piece, because I can't tell you how many times a week I say this, and I challenge people to tell me how many hours are in a week. And that puts things in perspective. Do you know how many hours are in a week?
I was just thinking, I don't know. No, 24 times 7. What is it?
Exactly. 168 hours in a week.
Okay.
168. And I challenge them. I'm like, and a lot can happen if you give up about 2.5, you know, they recommend 2 hours, 20 minutes of training a week for young kids. They recommend like 2 30-minute strength training sessions. And that can elicit a lot of results. You can get a lot of results if you train 3 times a week for 45 minutes to an hour. However, if you do the math, you have about 100, and even my elite athletes that train 4 days a week, you have 164 hours left in that week. if you do not take pride in the other 164, you're going to destroy those 4 hours you put in. So the big recovery piece isn't over. I don't want to overwhelm people. So I try to focus on the two pieces, especially with athletes. Number one is water, or three. Number one is water. You know, make sure you're drinking. You know, the safe bet is drink a gallon of water a day. But some studies will show if you drink half your body weight in ounces, some will say, you know, you should drink 70%.
What do you do? Say,
I drink a gallon a day.
So 64 ounces, right?
No, 128 ounces.
Oh, my bad. I'm off there. Yeah, half a gallon. Okay. So yeah. That's a lot of water. Wow.
Well, you got to imagine. So for an athlete, every pound they lose in a sport. Now, I work with basketball players. Very demanding sport. You know, not to say that soccer or football, but my specialty is basketball. You know, very, very demanding. Every pound you lose, you got to refill it with 16 ounces. So you mean to tell me you've played basketball before, you've played football before. Mm-hmm. If you were 2 pounds less after your workout, you got to drink 32 ounces on top of what your body needs that day. Hmm. So this is the importance of it, because our body's made up of 70%.
On top of the coffee you drink, on top of the energy drink that you might have, on top of any diuretic, right?
Right, exactly. Coffee, crazy. Some will say coffee may count. You know, if coffee may count, depends on what you put in it. But I don't count that. I don't count coffee.
Okay.
And then the next piece is going to be nutrition. And a lot of athletes, they need to gain weight. So it's like, just eat food. You know, kids will say, how much protein? Who cares? Eat food. Once you eat enough food, once you eat 5 meals a day, then I'll have the conversation of if you're eating the right stuff, because that's the biggest issue. You know, I got kids eat pizza for lunch, and then they go home and they'll have spaghetti for dinner, and then they don't eat breakfast, and they had a Pop-Tart somewhere throughout the day or a bag of chips. So at the end of the day, it's like, you need to eat 5 good meals a day. Once you do that, we'll talk, and that'll help them bounce back. And the last piece is going to be sleep. You know, you got it. You've read that book on sleep that I still need to get, but
why we sleep by Matthew Walker.
Why we sleep. Great. Yeah. I need to get in. I need to read that book. But at the end of the day, everyone says you see the best results during sleep.
There's a couple studies about from the NBA in that book that you'd appreciate, but mm-hmm. I am going to share a study real fast that I just heard in a podcast last week. 2012 study. I forget the varsity basketball program that they studied, but they looked at these kids who were chronically sleep deprived. I forget the exact number that they were getting per night, but definitely less than 8 hours. And they had reduced reaction time. They ran slower. Their shooting percentages at the free throw line, 3-point, 2-point field goals was all down. So just increasing that to 8.5 hours across the board, I don't know for how long, increased their shooting by 9%. That's significant. That's huge. Increase the reaction time. Increase. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the difference of winning and losing a game for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's just increasing their sleep. Yeah. That's scholarship, right?
To be real. That 30 to 40% from the 3-point line. If you're shooting 6 threes a game and you go from 30 to 40, that's 2 to 4. That's huge.
It's huge. Yeah. Yeah.
Huge.
Cool, man. So let's dive into the next question here. So across the board, what is the most impactful movement or exercise for an adolescent athlete?
I lost you on that one.
Across the board, what is the most impactful movement or exercise for an adolescent athlete?
You know, I'm going to say the hip hinge is the most impactful. I think you and I can definitely agree on that. I think the hip hinge is so fundamental because of the loading effects. And a lot of athletes, you know, they know how to bend at the knees, whether it's the right way. I'd say the easiest in a way would be the squat. Teach the squat. Usually most kids can teach – you can teach a kid how to squat because you put a box underneath them. You say bend your knees without letting your feet fall off the ground or your feet lift from the ground. But I think the number one movement that I need all my athletes to learn is the hip hinge.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, I totally agree. The founder, you know, but all the movements that I teach in foundation training start with that, the hip hinge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. When should an athlete seek their doctor or a specialist for an ailment they have?
I think right when they feel pain to the point where they have to stop doing what they're doing. You know, if you're feeling so much pain where you can't train with me in the weight room, you know, you can't go to practice. like being in school is uncomfortable. Anytime you have that acute pain, I think you go see one. Because, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, in some situations, I've had kids that told me my doctor told me to stop doing stuff. And I think that's the worst thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you should never stop moving. However, you should stop doing the things that have caused pain. Because yeah. we do know that increasing blood flow around damaged areas, whether it's through stim or whether it's through, you know, synergistic muscles moving versus the damaged area, you know, you can help the environment that's uncomfortable, that's causing you pain. So stop doing the things that causing pain is very important. Get the opinion of a doctor, because I'll never play around with an injured area. You know, if someone's like, if through a conversation, if a kid makes it seem like a muscle's really tight and that's what's kind of bothering them, then we may do some light soft tissue work, or we may add in some correctives to the squat. You know, if the knee hurts, let's elevate the heels for a little more dorsal flexion. Let's put a band around the knees. And if I notice that helps, then we'll continue. But if they're like, nope, can't, then okay, we'll do something different. But you need to go see a doctor, because, like I said, it's about the ceiling. If your ceiling is here and you have pain and you do nothing about why you're it's causing you pain, then that ceiling's going to get stuck. Pain goes away. Then you're going to get plugged by that roof. So let's figure out where the pain's coming from.
Good answer, Mark. I put you on the spot there, being a doc. You're probably like, oh boy, how am I going to answer this?
Yeah, right?
It makes sense. Yeah, that's a great answer. I always say pain a couple days in a row, usually above like a 4 out of 10. Because I think with younger athletes, it's hard to differentiate soreness, pain.
Right.
And that's also overtraining too. So I think there's just a lot of conversation to be had about all that. But yeah,
usually, I mean, you've seen athletes, usually pain's coming from the sport. So if you come to me and you take a day off your sport, we can continue training so you don't miss out on some of the physical properties that you get in the sport. But at the end of the day, if you see an athlete with a bum ankle, knee, or elbow, that's probably because of too much of their sport. You come to me, right? We're slowing down. And usually that'll help that pain process. But at the end of the day, like, I'll send people to you. What's the worst that's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know?
They're going to learn something new.
I'm going to learn. You know,
we're both going to learn, yeah. I think the biggest misconception is that when we're injured, we have to shut down and stop. That's terrible. I think we need to modify it. We need to keep moving the body. We need to keep our psychology and our mental health in check. It's especially for an athlete, a D1 athlete, you got to stop. Or a runner, you got to stop running. They freak out. They don't listen anymore.
Yeah.
And they don't get better. So let's switch gears about COVID here. So how has COVID affected your business, and how have you pivoted?
I think I got the question. You just froze, so I'm gonna.
So, how has COVID affected your business, and how have you pivoted?
Yeah, so COVID for sure has affected the business greatly. I have coaches that rent space. You know, we can't do what we've been doing. The gym's been shut down since March 19th, I believe. We're kind of getting. The state hasn't really identified what a gym is. I don't constitute Fit Strength Performance a gym. We're a private facility that caters to smaller groups. I think that if barbers can be open, if salons can be open, if bars can be open, you know, why can't we also be open in a further capacity? And, you know, I know myself and other gyms locally, we're trying to get a hold of the state to say, this is what we're doing. And some of the big things we're doing is I've sectioned off the gym. We have 4 10 by 20 stations, which is ample amount of space for people to do their training. We've marked off areas where we want people to stay off of if they are coming into the gym with multiple people. People enter one way, exit one way. We're requiring people to take their temperature before their session at home. And if they feel as if they're sick, if they've seen people who have left the state within the last 2 weeks, please stay home. If they're feeling ill, stay home. Us as coaches, we're wearing masks throughout the whole session. We're having people wash their hands before and after their session. We have 15-minute gaps in between our sessions, which gives us the ability to wipe everything down. And from there, you know, we're not penalizing people. If people don't want to come in because they don't feel comfortable, but they scheduled, that's okay. We're not going to penalize you because we want you to reach your goals. As a transition of not having the gym, you know, everything's virtual. I have a handful of clients, for a handful of athletes who've stuck with me. So we've been doing virtual training off of Zoom. I've loaned equipment out to athletes so they can still train at a higher level at home. My adults, me and some other coaches, we have a great fitness challenge going on. We got about 15 people jumping in. We have 7 Zoom workouts a week. We're getting after it for 45 minutes. We're still bringing in more clients who may need some support at home if they don't have equipment, or they have some, or they have minimal equipment.
Yeah, I feel for you guys, man, as gym owners. And you're not like a typical gym either. You're more performance, one-on-one, small group. Mm-hmm. So it's tough, man. You know, I think you're going to be bigger and better, your gym, from all this. And yeah. I think you've done a really good job pivoting and still, you know, providing for your clients, you know, doing the Zoom calls and all that. So
yeah, thank you.
How can listeners connect with you online, hear more about your business and Fit Strength?
Yeah, so I'm all over Facebook and Instagram. Those are the top two. We dabble with Twitter. The Fit Strength Instagram is fitstrength_perform. That's FITSTRENGTH_perform. And then Facebook, it's just Fit Strength Performance. We post things constantly. The Instagram page, there's a ton of info for athletes and adults in terms of things to help them reach a better athletic goal or to get better physically fit. And then on the Facebook page, same thing. So shoot me a message on there. You can DM me. My email is mark@fit-strength.com. If you have any inquiries or questions about your goals as an adult or your child, you know, I'm here to help, plain and simple.
You guys post some great content on Instagram. So kudos to you for that, man. Yeah. If you guys haven't checked out Mark, check out his stuff. You're going to learn a lot. So Mark, are you taking new clients? If so, what type of athletes do you work with and how can they make an appointment?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're taking new clients. The perfect athlete is the kid that's got goals and is looking to reach them. You know, we're a privatized facility. We're semi-private. There's no more than 2 to 4 athletes per session. My niche, so to speak, is basketball. I have a lot of basketball and volleyball players. And at the end of the day, an athlete is an athlete. So if you're looking to get stronger, faster, and more resilient to prevent injuries, then Fit Strength Performance is where you'll reach your goals. The best way to reach me is either going to be an email at mark@fit-strength.com, or you can shoot me a DM on Instagram or a message on Facebook.
And then you do work with adults too, you said, right?
Yep. Yeah, we have classes. Yep. We have, I have an SGX class. It's a strength group extreme class. And there we're really focusing on the fundamentals. You know, my perfect client for SGX is the individual that's tried CrossFit, that's tried those bigger boot camp places, and mm-hmm. it just didn't click, or it was a little too fast paced, too large of a group, and you're looking for something a little more condensed and a little more individualized attention to your needs. So that's my perfect client for those group classes. We have no more than 6 people per class. And the goal is to elicit a great stimulus so you lose weight, burn stubborn fat, gain muscle, but know that you're leaving the facility feeling great, moving very well, and not feeling pain at all.
You and I met a while back, and I remember, I think it was Village Bakery. We sat down and we just geeked out, man, for a while. And I knew that this guy knows his stuff. He's passionate, and you were just so hungry to learn. And I'm looking forward to doing that again. So as soon as we can grab coffee or lunch, man, let's do it.
Absolutely. You know it. You know it.
So Mark, final question. If you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here, where would you take them?
Well, if they're having some pain issues, it'd be Dr. Driscoll's chiropractor. However, I'm hoping they're not injured, but we're going to Fiorella. We're grabbing a chicken cutlet. We're going to enjoy either a nice glass of wine. You know, it's a nice, Fiorella is a great Italian spot in the public market. Very low key. They do a great job. The service is awesome. So I definitely have to take that individual there.
The best chicken cutlets in town, hands down.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Over arugula. I don't know what the sauce is. It's just, oh man.
I don't want to know. Cause then, you know, the more you know, the more you try to be like, I can make that. I don't need that.
No, don't even try. Great answer.
No doubt.
Well, hey, Mark, thank you for your time, man. I really appreciate it. I know this is round two, so thanks for your time. You're a busy guy. You got a business to run. You got a family. You got a wife. You got a baby boy. How's he doing?
He's doing great, man. We think a week or two he's going to be crawling. Week or two he might be crawling. So awesome, we're excited. Man. He's moving. He's laughing. He's giggling. He's a goofball. Like you said, those gates are coming up, and I'm going to get that extra cardio in every day trying to keep up with him.
Milestones, man. Enjoy every minute. Well, thanks again, man, for what you do for the community, man. You're doing a lot. You're helping a lot of people.
You as well. You as well, Matt. You're doing an awesome job. Love the stuff you're pushing.
Cool, man. I appreciate that. I received that. Thanks for listening to today's episode, guys. I hope you gained a lot of value, and we'll share this with family and friends to spread the wealth of knowledge that Mark gave us today. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me, info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram, @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.